Each week, deep in their secret chambers below Google Building 44, the Android editorial board meets to decide which apps and games will be featured in the Google Play Store. This is an important decision. For a lot of developers, it's a matter of life and death. So we take it very seriously.
At the same time,
it is an editorial decision. What does that mean? You have no control over this. I have no control over this. My wife wants to call me, but that's not going to happen.
That's the one time you're allowed to say no.
Exactly. You can't pay for featuring in Google Play. You can't bribe people. You can't send us bottles of Dom Perignon and what? Then get featured. That actually doesn't work as well as some people seem to think.
But keep trying.
There's no surefire recipe for getting featured. Decision is made by the editorial team according to their own criteria. So, you're never going to see a talk called What to Do to Get Featured on Google Play. At the same time, Dan and I have spent a lot of time with the editorial board, and we've seen a lot of games, a lot of excellent games, get rejected for what seem like sort of minor reasons. A lot of them are problems that are really easy to fix. So, although we can't talk about what to do to get featured on Google Play, we can talk about what to not do to not get featured on not Google. Yeah. Anyway.
The transcription's going to be great there.
More succinctly, 10 things that every Android gamer developer should know. So let's start with number one, Dan.
All right. So one of the things that people do when they go out and buy their great new Android handset, they come back and they go to Google Play and they want to get great stuff. And, you know, that was good. We at Android love all of our releases, but we always have a special place in our heart for the most recent version. And we love it when people use our newest operating system. We also love it when people buy new Android devices, so we tend to avoid featuring anything that's incompatible with the latest and greatest. The first thing you want to do is make sure you support high resolutions. You'll need to author your assets today for at least 720p. And remember that not all 720p displays are equal. Assets that look great on a 10-inch tablet aren't necessarily going to work on a 7-inch tablet or a phone, and this is especially true for UI elements that have to be sized like your fingers, like thumb sticks.
Oh, Dan. Yeah. Tell them what DPI the Nexus 7 is.
So the Nexus 7 is in between, but you should really think of it for the most part as being an HDPI device. We refer to it as TV DPI internally. And what this means is don't expect to have a resource that's sized for your finger. Instead, look at the display density and scale your resources accordingly.
Because you do not want to be the guy that designs the Xbox One controller, right? I've seen tablet games that basically do that.
Another thing you want to make sure is make sure your app isn't running in compatibility mode on Honeycomb and above. And you can tell you're in compatibility mode because there'll be extra icons in your status bar, like the menu button. Not everyone knows what this means, but to experienced users, it's a red flag. So what can you do about it? It turns out the solution is very simple. Just specify a target API of 11 or above. The target API, for what reason, is called target SDK version in your application manifest. And you should really target the latest version as much as possible. All that really means is I have tested on the latest version of Android. And this is good because we won't turn on any compatibility shims.
Now, the compiler will give you a warning. It'll say, hey, you just specified a target SDK that's greater than your min SDK, like that's a problem.
Yeah. So that's the one time. Normally look at lint and be like, yes, lint is right. In this case,
don't believe its lies.
Yeah, lint will actually do the right thing, and it'll actually tell you if you use API levels that aren't going to work on your target devices. So it's good. A lot of programmers worry that specifying high target API is going to mean that it gets filtered out on the Play Store. Of course, that isn't the case. It's just designed to turn off compatibility shims. Filtering is done with min and max SDK version. And in general, it makes sense to send min SDK version to the lowest version that your game will run on, set target SDK version to the version of the SDK you're compiling against or testing against, and really don't ever set max SDK version. But you know what's cooler than API level 16? Lights out. You can almost completely hide the soft buttons. And this is really easy to do. Just literally go to your view and set your view to status bar hidden. You can only do this on Honeycomb and above. The good news is that it's very easy to put in a conditional around that, as long as you're, you know, not targeting donut or something like that.
Right. They told us, by the way, to put a code sample in for that. And we're like, these are game
developers. They don't need a code sample for that. All right.
We'll be posting a code sample later.
Yeah, we will.
So, thing number two, how to evade pirates and stop vampires. So, by pirates and vampires, we mean people who steal software and people who steal bandwidth by downloading game resources when they haven't actually bought your game. Now, we can go on and on about whether pirates represent lost sales or theoretical lost sales or a wonderful new distribution mechanism that's going to make us all rich, but of the two, vampires are the ones we're most concerned about because they represent an immediate bill to you for bandwidth that you're using to download assets that were never paid for. So, we want to stop vampires the most, but we do want to stop them both. Now, when we're talking about stopping pirates, a lot of times we talk about copy protection. There's one thing that you should never do, and that is check the copy protection box on the Google Play publisher site. Now, we had this thing when we were sort of young and naive as an operating system called forward locking, and it prevented users from casually copying APKs from phone to phone. We optimistically called it copy protection because we thought that it would help deter piracy. It turns out we were completely wrong. Forward locking doesn't actually stop piracy at all. It's supposed to keep users from copying games, but what it really does is prevents the completely legitimate activity of putting a game on the SD card. But it gets better. Not only does forward locking prevent you from moving to SD card, but it also expands the size of the APK on your internal storage. So you basically got the worst of both worlds if you check that box. If you did ever check it, go uncheck it now. Just remember that once you remove forward locking, you will have to do another APK upload to get that update to come out. We're actually removing it very soon because it turned out to be a bit of what they call a Charlie Foxtrot in the business. So what do you do? Well, first, in order to deter pirates, you should use the license verification library. Now, this isn't a perfect solution, but it will help to deter casual piracy. It will not stop the most determined hackers. For vampires, though, we have an extremely good solution. It's already saved many of our partners hundreds of thousands of dollars in bandwidth, and that is APK expansion files, which means that Google is hosting your large files for you instead of you having to use your own content distribution network. This is good for two reasons. First, no cost to you. Second, unless you're a very, very large company yourself, we probably have a better CDN than you do. So, faster and cheaper. Use APK expansion files. You can also, if you do want to serve your own files, watch Dan's presentation from last year's Google I.O. to understand how to tie large file downloads to the LVL, the License Verification Library. That's actually what the APK expansion system does internally. And you can do it externally as well. Large file hosting is available now. It works on almost everything. Mm-hmm. And for the devices that were unable to get the Google Play update that enables large files, you can download Dan's excellent shim library that is chock full of best practices for how to do a background download. And you'll find that your user experience for downloads is much, much better.
Thank you. So now to point three, which is don't mess with the buttons. And if you notice, these Android devices have buttons on them, things like the lock button, the volume button, the back button, and the home button, and the apps switcher button. And basically, the goal with most of these is either leave it alone because you can't do anything about it, or try to use the default behavior of the framework. In the case of the volume keys, you want to make sure those volume messages go to the framework so you actually get the normal pop-up that the user expects for controlling the volume. Now, the one real question that game developers have is, what do I do about the back button? Because most games actually consist of a single activity, and the default behavior for the back button is just to close, destroy the activity, and remove history. So the way we like to think of the back button is it's sort of like the escape key. So let's take our example game here. And, you know, basically, you know, this is, we're, you know, this is a simple arcade game. And we start the game, we go through a few menus, we're in the middle of our playing, and we hit the back key. And boom. What does that do? Well, it makes sense for it to take us back here, because that's what the user expects, right? That's the screen the user was on. Even though this was all a single activity, we expect the Android navigation paradigm to be, you know, used. So another option is to actually pop up a dialogue. And this is very common. A lot of game developers do this. It's not the best practice because it really doesn't match the Android navigation paradigm, but it's very well known, and we certainly don't have anything against this practice. So the real question now is you've put up this dialogue, and where do you want it to go after you hit the back key again? Do you want it to go back to this screen, or do you want it to go back to the gameplay? And really, since this one is obviously looking like a dialogue, we expect it to behave like a dialogue in Android. So we've popped up the dialogue hitting the back key, we expect it to be dismissed. And general, what we're talking about here is choosing the UI that will disrupt the user's game experience the least. So dismissing the pause menu like a dialogue actually will be what the user expects. But even better, again, we skip the pause menu entirely, go back to our previous screen. We have some very obvious option to allow the user to continue where they left off.
Now, I realize that this is an incredible mock-up, and you're probably thinking, okay, I want my game to look exactly like that. But the truth is, Dan and I made it in Photoshop, and we're not professionals. So you might want to steer clear. But the main point that we're
trying to... But you say we don't have elite design skills?
No, we don't. The main point is that you want to be able to go back to a previous UI screen, but always have a way to go forward again.
Exactly. And here's the thing really, really not to do. And there's a lot of reasons why this is bad. One is that, obviously, this is a system dialogue which just drops the user out of their game. It's better than just quitting without warning, admittedly, you know, because at least the user hasn't lost data and lost the state here, but not by much. So just don't do it. So here is our back button recap. And believe it or not, there have been internal discussions about this and debates.
Ad nauseum.
Yes, exactly. But this is the basic theory of back button in Android games. In a dialogue, dismiss the dialogue. In a UI, whenever possible, move to previous screen. In gameplay, either pause or do one of the following. Show an options dialogue, move to the previous screen, and make sure that they haven't lost any state. And at the initial UI screen, you can just dismiss the app. There's no need to put up a big screen that says, do you really want to quit?
Do you really want to quit the title screen?
Yes.
This is an awesome title screen.
This is an epic title screen.
Exactly. But the most important thing is never lose progress.
Never.
Right. All right. Never allow the user to lose progress. That would suck. And to a certain extent, that also means don't lose progress in terms of needing to go back and load for 30 seconds. Which sometimes you can't do much about. All right. So number four, respect the life cycle. We're going to illustrate the life cycle problem with a little story. So wake up early in the morning. First thing I do is reach for my phone. Going to get a little gaming in before work when I'm going to go to work and play more games. But let's pretend this isn't me. This is some other dude. Right, on a roll, everything's cool, totally lost track of time. Oh no, I'm going to miss my bus. So really quick, throw on my work clothes, which totally look like this, and jump on the bus, head off to work. Now I'm given a presentation to my boss. Everything's going well until I got to check something on my phone, right? Exactly. Pull that baby out, turn it on. Oh my God, what's going on here? It's not just that it's playing music. It's playing music and the phone is locked. And now I'm really stressed out and I've got this lengthy PIN code that I need to enter and I can't even remember what it is, right? So everything sucks. My boss thinks I'm even more of an idiot than he already does. And I've just ruined my whole day. What's the problem here? Well, the issue is that the life cycle here is complicated. Not only is it complicated, it's varying. It varies slightly from OS to OS. None of the delivery order that you're seeing here is guaranteed. And in fact, it is changed in Jelly Bean because we told them to. So the problem is you lock your phone and the app gets an on pause. And then it gets an on stop at some point. When you the really great thing is on Honeycomb and ICS, there were some cases where while the phone was asleep, you would get an on resume. We didn't cover that here, but sometimes that will happen. Then the user goes back and presses the lock button again, and the phone tries to wake up and sends the foreground app an on restart, on resume. Now, you might be thinking at this point, who's the foreground app? You would be justified in assuming that it's the app in the foreground, which is the lock screen. Wrong. It's actually your app, because until Jelly Bean, the lock screen didn't count as an application. It was just like sort of a random overlay. So what'll happen is your application thinks that it's woken up and starts, you know, playing music or doing whatever, but it's actually being hidden by the lock screen still. And this is really, really annoying behavior. There's actually a very, very easy way to fix this. And forget about all this life cycle stuff, because it's difficult. There are edge cases. It's incredibly annoying to get right. All you need to do is this. If your application is paused, if your game is paused, stop playing sound. And when you want to start playing sound again, what do you look for? Not some Android lifecycle. You look for the game getting unpaused, which requires some sort of user activity, right? So the user hits a button to take you out of pause and go back to gameplay. That's when you restart the sound. It turns out this is great for two reasons. First, it avoids all this nonsense. Second, it turns out it's a great user experience to leave the app, and then when you come back in, it's paused. So you don't just get thrown right back into gameplay before you're prepared. Of course, hitting the lock screen isn't the only way that your game can get paused or even killed during gameplay. This is a consequence of being on a mobile operating system, right? It's not about multitasking. It's not about, you know, which model we chose or how we tombstone or anything like that. It's just the fact that your user is playing your game on a device that's designed to let him know when important things happen, like a phone call comes in. And it's designed to be put in his pocket when he needs to catch the bus. Android, by its very nature of being a smartphone OS, is interruptible. And so you need to be completely prepared to handle those interruptions in a way that doesn't waste your user's time. So we said it before, and we're going to recap now. Never, ever allow your user to lose progress based on an interruption that's beyond their control, or even an interruption that's under their control. Should we go to thing five?
Exactly. All right. So, Ian, this is your chance to get on the synthesizer here. Just want to let you know we're using an FM synthesizer that is, unfortunately, there we are. We need some volume. This is an open source project, and so you're more than welcome to download it. And Ian's going to give me some nice, yeah, that's good. All right. So,
what do you do, Dave?
So, minimize permissions. So, this is an actual application on Google Play. This is actually the list of permissions that the user has to see. And, you know, like, what is the user going to be like? Jeez, what am I agreeing to? Okay? That actually is from the web interface. So, what we have now is our top 10 bad game permissions. Yes, this is a top 10 list inside of a top 10 list.
By the way, you can tell that this is a Dan Galpin slide deck because we used the fire effect more than once.
Oh, yeah.
Totally broke that rule.
So, number one bad... Number 10, bad permission for a game to have is change Wi-Fi settings. Why are you doing this? You're toggling Wi-Fi on and you have no idea whether the user's actually set up Wi-Fi. And even better, there's an intent to throw the user right into the Wi-Fi chooser. So don't do it. Receive boot completed. Okay. Admittedly, there are some games that are resource management kind of games, and they really want to make sure they can constantly set alarms, but in general, most games don't need to do this unless they're trying to spam the user with something. Just please don't do this unless you absolutely have to. Probably the only good use of actually starting your game up is because you want to set an alarm, and that's pretty much it. You know, you want to make an alarm persist across a boot. Do some very, very lightweight stuff here. The real key thing is, whatever you do, do not have a consistently running service that makes a network connection and sucks the user's battery down, and we'll talk about that a little later.
Unless you're making a game for me, because I love it when my game notifies me that my cow needs to be clicked. I would forget to click that cow.
Well, yeah, absolutely. Not to mention, it's really nice. It helps to keep your hand warm as the phone's radio is constantly being kept on in your pocket. All right, query running tasks. Now, you know, why does a game want to spy on other tasks? There are a couple of semi-legitimate reasons for this, but most of the time, your game doesn't need to know what other tasks are running. Obtain fine location. Okay, now, there's a lot of people like, well, I have a location-based game. If you have a location-based game, if your game actually may has a change in it, if the user walks into their local coffee shop, then yeah, obtain fine location is cool. For most games who are just concerned with analytics, they want to know approximately where people are playing their game, they want to know a little bit about the demographics of their marketing, obtain fine location is just kind of creepy, and it requires firing up the GPS, using a lot of battery. Don't do it. Course location is good enough.
A lot of people will come back and tell us, well, my ad network required that. You know what? No. Because you know what? This guy does not need different ads than that guy. All right? So this is not the way things work. So course location is fine for that.
Okay. Read system log. Now, I've got bad news for you guys. If you haven't watched some of our other presentations, read system log actually is gone as of Jay. There is no more read system log that you can get. However, Jay allows you, without a permission, to read the system log for your own app. All right, come on. This is really cool stuff. So the good news is no creepy spying on what the user is doing by turning on the read system log permission. And at the same time, you can still get to the useful logs you need to help your debugging if the crash reporting and all the stuff we have on Google Play isn't enough. All right. Directly call phone numbers. We've seen this in a lot of applications. I'm like, seriously, there's an intent. Fire off and call a phone number. Why would you actually use this permission? That's just like, do you really want the game to pop up something that directly, I don't get it. All right, read and write contacts and calendar. Now, admittedly, there are some uses, but most of them, 99% of them, can actually be done with context choosers and context pickers. You don't actually need to have the context permission if you just want to have the user fill in a name. The only reason you need this is because you need to do something like spam every single user, or even worse, go and read their contacts and suck them into your own service and use them for nefarious purposes. And remember, these are not things that we are saying you can't use. What we're saying is if you use these things, you're going to really reduce your chance of ever being featured. Okay, so this is really the key thing about this list, is that we're going to say, what are you doing reading the user's contacts and calendar? And unless you have a really, really good excuse, we're not going to feature the app. That's what the team is going to do.
So I just got a reminder. It's great. 9:30 a.m. Huh? Click cow.
Oh, yeah. Reading and writing bookmarks. Super creepy. I want to go and check out
this. This is Eastern European porn site stuff, people.
Do you really? I mean, does the game really want to know the sites that someone else is? That's awful. And writing to the bookmarks is even worse. Like, wait, where is that super annoying site and how did it get to my? So, you know, look, unless you have a, I can't think of a legitimate reason for using this, which is why it's number three, but you're going to have to justify it seriously to the editorial board if you want to get a game feature with that. Okay, display system level alerts. This is the way you make your app do creepy stuff and pop up on top of other applications. And it's just not good. There's a very, very good chance your game has no possible useful way of doing this. Use the notification system we have built into Android. That's what it's for. And then finally, our number one top 10 bad permission that is likely to get you not featured is send and receive SMS. And first of all, so receive SMS really sucks because it actually allows your app to filter every single SMS message that comes into the device. Awful, awful, awful. As a user, I'm like, no way am I downloading that app, okay? And then send SMS, well, that allows you to bill people without them knowing it. Isn't that awesome? So yeah, seriously, if you ever want to get featured and this is there, I mean, like, the chances of you, like, basically zero. There is a way. If you really want to allow the user to share and to all their friends over SMS, use the intent. There's no permission involved, and the users will thank you. All right, so there we are, our top 10 list of bad permissions for games to not get featured on Google Play.
All right. And we're only half done, folks. But we did sort of front load this thing because we thought you'd all be gone by this point.
Mm-hmm.
So, item six, ready? There is no item six. Like, two guys got that.
Yeah.
Why did you do the hat? It's so unfair. You upstaged me with your Cruella de Vil pimp hat.
Hey, it was Pride last weekend here in San Francisco, okay? They were selling these all over the streets.
Pretty amazing.
And it does say on my IO tag, wears funny hats. There we are.
Good point. Well, actually, so we brought out the funny hat because, yeah, this is the boring, preachy part. We're in San Francisco. Dan drives a Prius.
You know, not everyone needs to know that. There are at least two or three Google employees who do not drive Prius.
That's true. I drive a 95 Integra that doesn't pass emissions. That's the kind of guy I am. All right. But environmental policy aside, it's important to be green on your app, on the phone. It's important to conserve your users' resources. You're game developers. You want to make the coolest game possible. You want to monetize and do some analytics and drive engagement, but these are portable devices. They have limited capabilities. They have limited resources. Your battery, your network bandwidth, your memory and storage are all precious, precious commodities that your user is trying to maximize at all times. And because users try to maximize these, we give them tools to understand what's going on. And if you haven't already, you will find that users use these tools all the time, and they watch your game. And if your battery usage is high, if you're always on the network, if you've got long-running services in the background, they will find out, and they will publicly shame you, often on Google+. Now, speaking of storage, there's one thing that we've been noticing that's a little disturbing, and it has to do with APK expansion files. See, what'll happen is Google Play drops your APK expansion on the SD card, which is cool. And then a lot of people say, you know what, I actually had that all packed up into one file because the man wouldn't let me upload more than two files. So I'm going to go ahead and unpack that so that I can actually use it. Oh, but then, wait, I've just used up a bunch more storage, so my policy is going to be, let's delete the original APK expansion file. And that seems like it would make a lot of sense, but it does not. Three times, you see? You see, we are so bad. The problem here is that now you've unpacked your APK expansion file, you've left all this junk over the user's SD card, and the APK expansion file is gone. So what does Google Play do? What any sane system would do and be like, dude, your file's gone? Want it back? So now instead of a gig or whatever it was, you've got 2 gigs and you've got some very unhappy users. Unfortunately, the way this works is you have to use your APK expansion file in place. Now, Dan's written a bunch of samples. Do you notice, by the way, that every time we talk about sample code, it starts Dan's written? And every time it's something I did, it starts I was so drunk. This is exactly why he's the senior member of our team. What you want to do is...
It's because I'm a month older.
Yeah, there we are.
That's true.
All right.
Yeah, so what you want to do is, you know, if you have your own binary blob reader, you have, you know, pack files or whatever, go ahead and use that. If you don't, we do have some samples that show you how to use an APK expansion file or even any type of zip file as a mountable file system, and that can actually make things easier
for you. Thing is, an APK file is really just a zip file. And so a lot of people are like, well, you know, I can't put it in my APK, so it's not going to work. And I'm like, wait, you can just put another zip file onto the drive, and you can do exactly the same thing. In fact, a lot of people are doing this. They figured out that when they're using even something like Unity, which normally pulls all of its resources out of the APK file, all you have to do is point Unity and say, actually, my APK file is really the second thing that I downloaded, and all of a sudden, Unity will pull all the files out of that. And there's actually even a tool that someone has made to take all those Unity files and pull them over to the second file. So it's not hard. But if you don't have it built into your tool, I have a couple of things you can look at. Look at the APK expansion file libraries. There's actually a zip resource file that I put down there. You can also create it. There's also a content provider example. So if you really even want to go all the way Android and you want to store content that's referenced using an asset content provider, it's actually all there in sample code for you. So no excuses, man, OK?
All right. We ready for 7?
We're ready for 7.
All right. This is going to be so good.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. So one of the things that happens when you sign up for Google Play is that you're actually asked to look at some things like what you should do and what you shouldn't do on Google Play. And if you think about Google Play, it is this ecosystem where OEMs and developers and carriers all get together to make sure there's one awesome place to find great stuff.
And a lot of times, we do sort of envision in our heads Google Play is like the old Star Trek when Spock would play this three-dimensional game of chess, except instead of Spock, it's Andy, and that's actually totally downplaying the complexity of this system. There's a lot of players in this system, and it all combines to give you 400 million devices to sell to, but it does come with some restrictions.
Yeah, and then the real key thing is we want to make sure you can publish once and you don't have to go and hunt around to find all sorts of places and rules and different sets of rules to publish your app. So here are our rules, and they get you to the largest numbers of devices. All right.
The three commandments.
The three commandments of Google Play. One, thou shalt have no payment providers but Google Play. Okay, this is basically pretty simple. You're listing on our service, don't confuse users by having them input all sorts of different information, sending them to different places, billing them without their knowledge. We want one straightforward way that users understand that they're paying for content.
We would also like to be able to continue paying for Google Play, so that's, we do have a bit of a selfish motive here, but that's the, and these rules aren't,
We want carriers to keep putting Google Play on our devices.
Exactly.
That's probably the most important thing.
Yeah. So, sir, you in the back with the golden calf, put that away.
Two, thou shalt not upload an app that downloads other apps. Now, because Google Play, the main goal of Google Play is to be a place where people go to find content, and it's not a place to distribute your app store. Like, if you want to distribute your app store, distribute it somewhere else. Android is an open platform, okay? The second thing is, if you're actually installing other apps, it's a really bad user experience. You'll find out. So, yeah, don't do it. And it's a good way to make sure that things happen badly with our enforcement team. All right, and then finally, thou shalt not bribe thy customers for 5-star reviews.
For that is hateful in my sight, saith me.
That was good. So don't provide incentives for specific review scores. Google Play will not feature an app that incentivizes review scores, partially because it's hard to tell what people actually think of your game when they're being paid to rate it 5 stars. Besides, it's actually impossible for your game to find out what score a particular user gave you, so promising to pay for a specific score is kind of dishonest. So, you know, at the same time, we don't want to discourage apps from asking for ratings. The right way to ask for ratings is to be upfront, honest, and sincere. Ask your users for their candid feedback. If you want to, you could incentivize your user to leave a rating, just don't ask for a specific rating. You could also ask for a specific rating without offering an incentive. That's within the letter of the law, but not really the spirit. The whole point of reviews is to get honest feedback so you can improve your game.
So here's some examples that we pulled from actual games and simply, you know, altered a little bit to protect the innocent. And so when we did this presentation for our team, we got two major pieces of feedback. One was the Australians thought that Thing 6 was racist, and two was that, you see, they don't even remember what Thing 6 was, so we didn't, okay. You'll wake up, the coffee will kick in a little bit. Two was, we see these example dialogue boxes, but there's no real feedback as to which ones are good, which ones are bad, and how good and bad they are. So I've enlisted my baby daughter to help out. Thanks for playing. Please take some time to rate this game on Google Play. We want to know what you think. Baby daughter says, oh, daddy, that's so great.
Did you enjoy this game? Rate it 5 stars.
Baby daughter says, that's a little sketchy, daddy.
Even worse, having fun, your 5-star rating helps us to keep this game updated. Oh, sad daughter. Or how about this? Want more Galpin Bucks? Rate this game 5 stars to get 100 Galpin Bucks right away, and all of your friends will think you're cool. Mad,
baby. I will
kill
you.
So, there's some shady characters out there who will claim these rules don't apply to them, or they're not enforced, or they have some sort of arrangement with Google that allows them to use a third-party payment processor. This is not true. Do not believe their lies, all right? So we're giving you the straight story here. And that takes us to point 8.
Awesome. In-app payments are unfortunately easy to get wrong. Now, our in-app payment system seems like it should be relatively easy, okay? The customer decides they're going to buy something, they hit the big button, delivery guy comes, delivers your thing, and the customer receives it, and everything's cool, and they're super happy.
Thanks, bro.
But what really happens is, a little bit like the FedEx scenario here, but you're asleep. Okay? Because sometimes your app will be sleeping when this message arrives. Now, in that case, Normal real world delivery companies have a policy, right? They're going to try to deliver, and if there's somebody home, like your roommate, they'll be like, oh, can you sign for this? Yeah, totally. And then later on, your roommate gives you the package, and you're like,
thanks, bro.
Excellent. But what if your roommate is this guy? So here's what happens. It's very, very common in games because so many games use native libraries. Game's going to be written with a big game piece and then this little billing service piece that you tacked on as an afterthought because our documentation said that you had to, and then a big shared library that both of those pieces are going to talk to. And that is totally fine as long as you're launching with the expected process, right? So the user has clicked on your icon in the launcher. Launcher sends action main. The game starts up the shared library. Service starts, talks to the shared library, listens for billing messages. When billing message gets there, it does whatever you do in the game to acknowledge billing and fulfill it. And everybody's happy. But sometimes things don't go as planned. Because when the message gets there, your app is no longer available. Why? Why would that happen? It's conventional wisdom to think, well, this is because our billing process took way too long. And that's actually untrue. Not because our billing process is lightning fast, although it frequently is, but because we actually just cancel the whole thing after, what is it, 45 seconds?
Yeah. So, I mean, basically, these are for the most part, for your applications, these are synchronous transactions.
Right. So why is your app asleep? Well, the first culprit is Google Play itself. In order to do the in-app billing, we have to launch Google Play. Google Play is not maybe the slimmest service in the world, and in general, games aren't either. So when two large processes start on the Android device, the OS starts to freak out. Like, okay, one of these things has got to go, right?
Now one of the things to note is your application will get on low memory. And it actually has the ability to eject stuff at this point and try to keep itself alive. But, you know, a lot of game developers don't really want to do that. They're like, life cycle, you know, whatever. We're just going to let ourselves die.
Exactly.
And that's what happens. We go, you're the biggest thing going, and we can get rid of a lot of space to allow Google Play to actually run.
So, yeah, ironically enough, launching the in-app billing kills your process. And then when you come back from in-app billing, your process should restart, but you frequently don't take care of that correctly. This is a little unexpected. But that aside, there's actually another really good reason for your app to be asleep when a billing message arrives. And I'd like to illustrate this point with a small shot of a portion of Dan's desk. A lot of people have multiple devices. And Google Play policies allow you to buy something once and use it on multiple devices. Customers love this. I love this. It's a great policy. But what it means is if I bought something on my phone, my tablet is going to get a billing message. And since my tablet probably isn't even on, the app that's supposed to receive it is probably asleep. So what happens? Well, of course you're going to wake up. You know, we need to deliver this thing, so Google Play is going to try and wake you up, but it's not going to try and wake up your whole app. It just wakes up the service. The problem is, when the service wakes up, you haven't written it to initialize all of the other code. You wouldn't want to, right? Because a lot of times initializing the shared library means loading all your resources or doing a lot of expensive work. But if the shared library is not there, and by shared library, that's a catch-all for, your in-game messaging system, Unity messages, shared memory between your service and game, anything that's not persistent, that will, number four, that's going to kill everything.
I want to make it clear that I actually didn't personally put the fire effects in this presentation, okay?
No, you did.
Only one of them.
That's right. And then I got a little excited. I'm like, I want to be like Dan. All right, so a lot of times people say, well, that's not a problem, right? I read the documentation. This is an issue. You guys are reliable. If I don't acknowledge your receipt, then you're just going to keep calling me back, right? Which is somewhat true. Okay, if you do not acknowledge a billing message, we will keep calling you back until it gets acknowledged. Now, let's leave aside the fact that actually some developers will acknowledge the billing message anyway without successfully delivering it. Those guys just need to get their act together. Waiting for our billing message to be resent has two issues. The first is, because we don't want to completely spam the user's device, we use exponential backoff. And since you've gotten yourself into a situation where your app needs to be running in order for the billing message to be received, you're in a crapshoot here because the user has to have launched your app in order for that billing message to be received, and the billing messages are coming at a slower and slower rate. So it's very, very unlikely that they're actually going to have the app open at the correct time, especially if they just closed it in frustration because they think that you cheated them by not delivering the goods that they just purchased. But there's a second and more compelling reason to be careful about this, and that is during this entire time that we are essentially leaving post-it notes on your door saying, try to deliver, come, we'll be back tomorrow, try to deliver, adult must sign, that whole time the user has already been billed. So let me just emphasize that. The user has already been billed. We billed the user when we sent the first acknowledgement. Why? Because otherwise it would be trivial for a user to buy something and then block your port so you couldn't send an acknowledgement. And then we'd be like, oh, I guess it never got delivered. And meanwhile, you're like, oh, I guess it got fulfilled. And the user's like, So the user will see this show up on their credit card, and if you don't fulfill it immediately, they'll think that you cheated them, which, in fact, you sort of did unintentionally. This turns into a support call for you, often a support call for us, and overall, a poor experience. So be very, very careful.
Bad ratings. That's the key thing. And bad ratings keep your app from being
featured. Absolutely. Absolutely. So what should you do? Well, the right way to do this is to be reliable yourself. Okay, we took care of reliably delivering this thing all the way across the internet through miles and miles of fiber optic cables and the harsh vacuum is spaced. The least you could do is reliably deliver it from one piece of your app to the other. And the right way to do this is persisting it. So when your service wakes up to receive a notification from the billing, it should persist that to some sort of storage. You know, I don't care if you want to use a file or SQLite or whatever. And then send your in-game message to say, hey, go check your mailbox. And your app will check that and see that the message came in and deal with it. If your app was sleeping at the time, then fine. You don't get the notification that says, hey, go check persistent storage. But next time your app starts up, the first thing you do is check persistent storage and say, oh, hey, looks like a purchase came in. Congratulations. You now have 100 more Galpin bucks or whatever it is you're giving away. And the user can immediately see that they did indeed purchase and get value for the money that they just spent.
All right, let's go quickly on to 9. Let's take a quick talk about testing. We have a lot of devices. And the problem with lots of devices is people are trying to figure out, how do I test with this vast ecosystem that we have out here? But the truth is, most of this stuff is actually really straightforward. Input devices. There are not that many input devices on Android, and you should support as many of them as you possibly can. Form factor. It's pretty straightforward. We don't actually have that many different form factor styles in Android. You have to support a series of aspect ratios between 16:9 and 1:3:3. And it's not the end of the world for most titles if you started off the design of the title to support that. If you decided you're going to support one aspect ratio from the beginning and then you're like, oh my goodness, I'm now going to Android and I have to support 4, you know, essentially, then this is going to be a rough transition for you. So it's good to start off designing for that. But even if you haven't designed for it, there are things that you can do that are fairly straightforward to make it look like you designed for it. OS version, that's pretty straightforward. The OS versions don't differ all that much, and it's pretty easy to get. But here we get to the hard stuff, the driver stack and the GPU hardware. And there's kind of two things to look at. One, of course, is, and this may be hard, this may be hard to believe, there are sometimes bugs in drivers. I'm sure none of you have ever experienced this on any other devices, but it actually happens. And then GPU hardware differs. And let's talk just quickly about the most common GPUs you will see in the Android world. So we have Adreno, PowerVR, Tegra, Mali, Vivante, and Broadcom. And probably a lot of you haven't heard of the last two, but they are in lots of devices as well. And the real thing to note is that all of them essentially work differently than PowerVR. So if you all go and say, I just tested on that second one, if you only test on the Galaxy Nexus, if you only performance profile and optimize around the Galaxy Nexus, you will be sad. Because on PowerVR, usually you get a lot of performance by doing things like sorting things by materials. And you pretty much want to ignore sorting things by geometry and depth and complexity. And on every other one of these platforms, you get an enormous performance boost by doing that. And in fact, you want to have your engine and your renderer be able to work in both ways. So first of all, there's a performance, there's that element. Also, we have several different texture compression formats if you really want the highest possible performance. And all of these devices are ultimately fill limited. Then, of course, you want to use the best texture compression possible. So for your non-alpha textures that are actually, you know, fairly, like, photographic, you can use ETC1 on every single one of these platforms. But when you get into things that are using alpha, then you're going to be stuck going to one of the proprietary formats or using a shader and two ETC1 textures, which will slow things down. So these are decisions you have to make as to how optimal it is you want your game to be, how necessary it is to make these optimizations. We actually support multiple APK based upon texture compression formats. So you can actually have a different APK with a separate APK expansion file for every single one. So there are ways to tackle this problem. And again, it may not be necessary for your title. The thing to do is make sure you have one of at least 4 of these, probably the top 4 as they represent the largest majority of devices out there, to test on. And that's just the most important thing. If you're doing a 3D game, if you're doing a 2D game, the chances are you may not even notice. But if you're doing a 3D game, it's important to make sure that you work with these different drivers.
Excellent. Thing 10, I'm going to talk a little bit about playlistings. All right. So let's say that you've done everything that we've asked. You've got a great game, you've got great ratings, you didn't screw up the in-app billing, you didn't do anything shady with your permissions, and we totally want to feature you. One problem. We need to actually get you into the store. And where a lot of people end up having problems is on the listing itself. Now, it may not be obvious, but when you upload the gigantic graphic that we use on our website, you are also actually uploading the little itty-bitty graphic that we use on the device.
You know, it looks pretty gruesome in both modes.
It really does. So we chose this graphic, A, because the game is featured this week, and B, because it does have a serious problem in that the contrast here isn't really great enough for you to be able to read the title Chain Reaction when that thing gets shrunk down to about an inch across. What I'll usually tell people do is attach this to, like, let's say a Gmail or, you know, something that does a thumbnail preview. Get up from your desk, walk about 6 feet back, look at it on your web browser, and ask yourself, can you still read the title? Does it still look good? If it doesn't, then it's not going to look good on a very small form factor device. So be careful to give yourself enough contrast. Use a large enough area for the title, and be a little careful of subtitles. So you can see, for instance, on Real Soccer, although they did a great job of making the RS and the Real Soccer big enough to read.
Dude.
Oh, wow.
That was the software update that came right in the middle of our presentation.
Thanks, Google. All right. When you look at that on the small device, the subtitle gets nearly lost. We usually tell people that if you're using about 50% of the surface area of your graphic for your logo, that's probably going to show up okay. If you're using less than that, you're going to want to do some serious testing to make sure that it's not going to become illegible when it gets tiny. Speaking of feature graphics, sometimes people omit them entirely. Like this famous developer who apparently knows absolutely nothing about Android. Okay, at least a few people recognize this game. So the problem with this now is that since he didn't upload a web feature graphic, we're actually unable to feature the game at all because we don't have anything to put in that space. You might say, oh, but you know, can't you guys use some other graphic? Wouldn't that be smart? Sure, but you know how software works. We totally don't have that pipeline. Someday we will. Maybe, but not today.
Besides, would you want to choose one of these random screenshots? It just doesn't make any sense.
No. So if you don't have a graphic here on your web store listing, you're not going to get featured. You're also not going to get featured if your description is terrible or if you use this space to do some keyword spamming or if you've got, like, all caps, super excited stuff, or if you say things like, now, the hit game on this other platform finally comes to Android because it sucks less or something.
Yeah.
You know, basically.
The feature team loves that.
Yeah, which, by the way, yeah, if you've got a screenshot here or, more commonly, a gameplay video that ends with a spinning shot of some other device with a now available on some other store, that's sort of a party foul. You don't want to do that. We won't feature you. We'll just get on the phone and be like, you can upload a different video.
Yeah,
but save us both some time and don't do that.
Yeah, another thing to note here is there are rules against spamming and keyword spam in here. So you should actually go through the Google Play Terms of Service, because one thing you don't want to do is say, if you really like blah game and blah game and blah game, you should like our clone of it. First of all, it looks kind of awful to do that. And second of all, it is keyword spam as far as our team is concerned. And it can actually get your game, believe it or not, you could suspend it. So it's actually a very serious rule. They don't want people to try to leverage other games' keywords.
Yep. The other thing about this description is, although we don't want you to keyword spam or use other search engine optimization techniques, there is one optimization that you can use that will boost you in the search ratings, and that is to make sure that your description is localized. If the description is localized into the user's language, then that description will appear higher on search results compared to similarly ranked queries that are not localized. Now, people say, what should I localize into? And the most common response is going to be EFIG CGK, so English, French, Italian, German, Spanish, Chinese, Japanese, and Korean. But if I had to pick two of these, the first is English because, you know, we're white dudes. But second, if you can only pick one non-English language, you're probably best off. Now, of course, this isn't advice that's maybe universally applicable, but in general, you'd be better off with Korean because Korea loves Android. It's a huge, huge market for Android products and Android games. So you go there and then maybe Japanese.
And Japan is pretty awesome, too. It depends on the title, whether it's culturally appropriate. But most importantly, and this is point 11.
Yeah, because it goes to 11.
It goes to 11. Make a great game. I know.
Yeah.
So, you know, obviously, as we said before, it's an editorial process. And ultimately, making awesome games is the way to get featured. But if you do all of those other things, you're going to not get featured. So we've told you what not to do. And now go out, make awesome games. Don't let these things block your games from getting featured. So we wanted to thank you for coming. We're really out of time.